Her husband came home in 5 days. She ran down my steps to meet him. She asked if she could stay another week. She didn't feel secure enough to go home. She stayed another week in my home. The next week, she drove her car for the first time in 2 years. She drove home. That night, her husband took the whole family to a shopping mall, and they all did their shopping. They went to a little restaurant, and he said there was a little round table, and the parents and the three children sat and held hands and gave thanks for this wonderful healing in that little restaurant. And after they'd done their shopping, they came to see me, and they had a big, big bunch of flowers. And her husband kissed me and thanked me and said, "I never thought I'd be so grateful to push a shopping trolley round a store, but we were doing it together. And you can't imagine what that meant for our family." So I said to them, "You know, it's remarkable that when Hillary was really grateful, that the healing speeded up. And if that can happen to a person, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have a Thanksgiving Square in Belfast? If it could do that for a person, what couldn't it do for a city? It would stop people from feeling that we're hard done by, that, you know, we're to be pitied. We'd get our thoughts on thanking God for the things that we had to be thankful for, like a beautiful country to live in and very warm and kind people." And they both agreed that that was a great idea. And so I was going to Boston 3 weeks after that, and I said, "Well, I'm going to try and find out where about this Thanksgiving Square." So I asked the person who was the manager of the practitioners department at that time, had she ever heard of Thanksgiving Square? She said, "I know all about it. I was brought up in Dallas." She said, "The man who started Thanksgiving Square was brought up in our Sunday school." She said, "Why don't I call him and you can talk to him?" Well, Peter Stewart came on the phone. He was so pleased that I was from Ireland and I wanted to see Thanksgiving Square that they offered to bring me there. They bought me a ticket and I went to see Thanksgiving Square, and I just loved it. Because it's right in the very center of Dallas, right surrounded by all these big glass buildings. And they have a beautiful waterfall. People come there and sit and eat their lunch. And they have a building in the shape of a spiral. And the top of that building is a little chapel. And you can go there and give thanks for whatever. They have like a big goldfish bowl, and you write on a little card what you're thankful for. You put it into the bowl, and if you go in there, you can take a handful of cards and read them. I read one that said this woman had only been married 5 years and her husband died, but she thanked God for 5 years with a wonderful man, because some people have 50 years with a bad man. Now, I thought that was something nice to give thanks for, and a young couple gave thanks. They just got engaged that day. And so I tried for 8 years to interest the people of Northern Ireland in a Thanksgiving Square. I put letters and ads in newspapers, and I was invited onto our local radio twice on Thanksgiving Day, but I got very, very little response. But I knew that it was a right idea and that the seed had been planted. And it was very interesting that just before the ceasefire was announced in Northern Ireland, a group of very influential people came to me and said, "We love this idea of Thanksgiving Square, and we think it's time that we had one." You see, the songbird sang before the dawn. The very idea of us giving thanks together, we held a little meeting in my home, and we had the goldfish bowl, and we put our little cards of thanks in there. And I'm not saying that the ceasefire happened because of us giving God thanks, but I know it helped. I know a lot of people were praying about that. And now the idea is taking off. I think we'll soon have our site. And they're going to raise funds, and hopefully our city is going to have a Thanksgiving Square. For us, that will be special. If you go into one of our churches in Northern Ireland, people know what you are. You either go into a Catholic church or a Protestant church. If you have a Thanksgiving Square, nobody knows what you are. You can go in there and give your thanks to God, and it'd be a good place for people to unite them and to learn the different cultures from each other. Could be used for many, many things. So I want to talk to you a little bit about Peter Henniker Heaton, the man who wrote that article. This also showed me that our sense of timing is all wrong. You see, I gave that couple a Christian Science textbook, which they had on their shelves for 17 years before it was read. Now, I thought if you give that to somebody and they don't read it in 3 months, forget it. That's my sense of timing. Peter Henniker Heaton's article, Gratitude Not Grieving, must have been written, I don't know, 18 or 20 years before my friend read this article. But the truth in it was still blessing, and it was still doing good. Now, Peter Henniker Heaton knew the power of gratitude. I'm sure you have all read about his story. It took him his healing 10 years. He was, during the war, he was invalided out of the Navy for paralysis in his legs. He was bedridden. His wife, who was an opera singer and a soloist, had to go out to work to earn money to pay the rent to keep him. She had to leave him in bed. The bombs were falling in London. There were times when she had to carry him on her back down 3 flights of stairs to their air raid shelter. He had to overcome bed sores. He got so that he couldn't even turn a page. Someone made him a little device that turned the pages of the book, and he learned the Christian Science textbook off by heart. His healing took 10 whole years. And on the first day that he went out after 10 years, he was out on 2 crutches. And he was so thrilled to be out, he decided to get onto a bus. He got onto a bus. And this man got on the bus and sat beside him, and this man was very grumpy and complaining about everything, about the weather and the bus driver and the price of the fares. So Peter said to him, "Aren't you grateful that you're out on such a nice day and you do have your bus fare for this bus?" And he said to Peter, "No, I'm not grateful." He said, "I suppose you've got everything in the world to be grateful for." Peter said, "I have a lot to be grateful for." He said, those crutches over there, they're mine. And I have been ill for 10 years, and this is my first day out." And the man said, "Well, there you go. You're grateful because you're here." Peter said, "No, I'm here because I was grateful." He knew the power of gratitude. The songbird sang before the dawn. And he was a songbird that sang before the dawn. Because in his darkest days, and there were days that looked like he was passing on, he never gave up hope. And he wrote a poem called Jubilee. And I'll just read the last verse. "My harvest's by the locusts eaten, my glad green shoots that never flowered, by sudden storm and rain downbeaten, by greedy flower, fly and frost devoured. These harvests of my winter sowing now crowd in wagons to my gate, abundance full and overflowing, to the last grain restored complete." He wrote that way before he got his healing. The songbird sang before the dawn. And someone told me about a testimony that they heard many years ago in a church. This woman gave a testimony that her husband had become very ill, and her sister lived with them, and she and her sister nursed the husband. And they had to make a bed for him in a downstairs room. And they were really praying and praying about this situation, both of them. But he got worse and worse, and one night it looked like he was going to pass on. And they were standing beside his bed. One sister was in tears, and she said, "I don't know why our prayers haven't been answered." She said, "We've been praying with Mrs. Eddy's hymn, 'Shepherd, Show Me How to Go.'" And she said, the hymn said, "I will listen." And her sister said, "We listened." And the next thing she said was, "I will follow." Her sister said, "We followed." "We listened and we followed." And she said, "Well, the third step is, I will rejoice." She said, her sister said, "That's the one thing we haven't done. We haven't rejoiced." There were sliding doors to separate the two rooms, and they pulled these doors across, and they went into the other room, and they played the piano, and they sang hymns all night long. They went to bed about 5 a.m., and the next morning the husband ran up the stairs to tell them he was asleep. The songbird sang before the dawn in that occasion too. I love that story. Then there's a story a practitioner told me of a woman, and she had a very serious complaint. She couldn't walk, and she was becoming discouraged because she wasn't seeing any change in her condition. And one day the practitioner came to visit her, and he said, "Would you do something for me today?" She said, "I'll do anything I can do." He said, "I want you to start praising God and giving thanks." And the woman began to cry, and she said, "That's the one thing I can't do. I'm in too much pain. My husband has lost his job. We're in debt. I have nothing to be thankful for." He said, "Well, could you try to be thankful that this condition is not real? It seems very real to you, but it's not real to God. Could you be thankful for that?" "Oh, yes," she said, "I could be thankful for that." He said, "Could you be thankful that with God all things are possible?" She said, "Yes, I could be thankful for that." He said, "Could you be thankful that you're made in the image and likeness of God? That you're perfect and beautiful and healthy and free and active?" She said, "I could be thankful for that." He said, "Okay, I want you from today to write out a gratitude list and post it to me every night so that I get it the next day." The next day he got a letter with 16 pages in it, and the woman came to his door. She was healed. You see, the gratitude came first. And we think that we can't be grateful until we see a change, till we feel better and so forth. But that's not the way it is. The songbird sings before the dawn. Do you know that every problem in the world is a belief of lack? The world is mesmerized by the belief of lack and limitation. We think there's only so much to go around, there's only so much money, there's only so many jobs, there's only so many men, if somebody's looking for a husband. You know, everything is limitation, so much understanding. But we have to see that God's law is infinity, freedom, harmony, and boundless bliss. He doesn't know any lack or limitation. So sometimes when we're having a problem and it's not being met, we have to stop and handle the belief of limitation. Somebody with plenty of money can see limitation in other directions, in that they can't get the right people to work for them, or the right opportunities, or there's not the right coordination. But it's all a belief in lack. And as people get older, the belief is that there's something lacking in their body. Mortal mind is always telling us that we need something added to us or something taken from us to make us the perfect child of God. But it tells us in the Bible that "I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it." nothing needs to be added to or taken from God's child to make him the perfect child of God.